Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly call. Today is Monday, February 24th, 2025. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Time. If you're listening over Rumble or YouTube and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us live by phone, app, or browser. If anybody would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions@nationallibertyalliance.org. That's plural, questions. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more, or click on our donation tab on the top right side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up with our scripture reading where we left off last week. We're in the Gospel of John, and tonight we'll be looking at chapter 16, read by Alexander Scorby. Gospel of John, chapter 16.
Chapter 16. These things have I spoken unto you, that ye should not be offended. They shall put you out of the synagogues. Yea, the time cometh that whosoever killeth you will think that he doeth God service. And these things will they do unto you, because they have not known the Father, nor me. But these things have I told you, that when the time shall come, ye may remember that I told you of them. And these things I said not unto you at the beginning, because I was with you. But now I go my way to him that sent me. And none of you asketh me, Whither goest thou? But because I have said these things unto you, sorrow hath filled your heart. Nevertheless, I tell you the truth. It is expedient for you that I go away. For if I go not away, the Comforter will not come unto you. But if I depart, I will send him unto you. And when he is come, he will reprove the world of sin, and of righteousness, and of judgment. Of sin, because they believe not on me. Of righteousness, because I go to my Father, and ye see me no more. Of judgment, because the prince of this world is judged. I have yet many things to say unto you, but ye cannot bear them now. Howbeit, when he, the Spirit of truth, is come, he will guide you into all truth. For he shall not speak of himself, but whatsoever he shall hear, that shall he speak, and he will show you things to come. He shall glorify me, for he shall receive of mine, and shall show it unto you. All things that the Father hath are mine. Therefore said I, that he shall take of mine, and shall show it unto you. A little while, and ye shall not see me. And again a little while, and ye shall see me, because I go to the Father. Then said some of his disciples among themselves, What is this that he saith unto us? A little while, and ye shall not see me, and again a little while, and ye shall see me, and because I go to the Father. They said therefore, What is this that he saith? A little while. We cannot tell what he saith. Now Jesus knew that they were desirous to ask him, and said unto them, Do ye inquire among yourselves of that I said, A little while, and ye shall not see me, and again a little while, and ye shall see me? Verily, verily, I say unto you, that ye shall weep and lament, but the world shall rejoice. And ye shall be sorrowful, but your sorrow shall be turned into joy. A woman, when she is in travail, hath sorrow, because her hour is come. But as soon as she is delivered of the child, she remembereth no more the anguish, for joy that a man is born into the world. And ye now therefore have sorrow, but I will see you again. And your heart shall rejoice, and your joy no man taketh from you. And in that day ye shall ask me nothing. Verily, verily, I say unto you, whatsoever ye shall ask the Father in my name, he will give it you. Hitherto have ye asked nothing in my name. Ask, and ye shall receive, that your joy may be full. These things have I spoken unto you in Proverbs, but the time cometh when I shall no more speak unto you in Proverbs, but I shall show you plainly of the Father. At that day ye shall ask in my name, and I say not unto you that I will pray the Father for you, for the Father himself loveth you, because ye have loved me, and have believed that I came out from God. I came forth from the Father, and am come into the world. Again I leave the world, and go to the Father. His disciples said unto him, Lo, now speakest thou plainly, and speakest no proverb. Now are we sure that thou knowest all things, and needest not that any man should ask thee. By this we believe that thou camest forth from God. Jesus answered them, Do ye now believe? Behold, the hour cometh, yea, is now come, that ye shall be scattered every man to his own, and shall leave me alone. And yet I am not alone, because the Father is with me. These things I have spoken unto you, that in me ye might have peace. In the world ye shall have tribulation. But be of good cheer. I have overcome the world.
Okay, Ron, do we have any questions or announcements tonight?
Yes, just one question. And it is, there seems to be some conjecture over the Constitution for the United States versus the state constitutions. I hear that states are free to do what they want, and then I hear about the full faith and credit clause binding the several states under the Constitution for the United States. That being said, neither body of government can diminish our unalienable rights. Is that correct?
Well, you're right. No part of government could negate our unalienable rights. They're given from God. And the lawmakers are we the people. We are the lawmakers. We the people ordained and established the Constitution for them. We established the foundation of the law through Thomas Jefferson, the Declaration of Independence. So, correct. And that's the only question we have tonight.
Yep, that's the only one I've got, John.
Okay. All right, well, the queue is open. Anybody wants to get into the queue? It's star six and one if you're on a phone. Or app browser. You should have a button there somewhere on the app or the browser to get into the queue. You know, one of the things I want to do, we have a serious problem with a lot of people that are even in Trump's administration, including Trump, and that is that they don't understand or they don't respond to the fact that we are a republic. You know, the Constitution guarantees a republican form of government, not a democratic form of government, a republican form of government. And it is extremely important that we fix this problem. You know, we've been sending papers to the administration and to all the people within, or most of them anyway, within the administration. There's some new people that we need to send some information to. And there's also some individuals that are around Trump that we need to send some information to. And I'm thinking that, you know, in order to fully educate these people, I think we need to send all of them the copy of the book, Government by Consent. The last paper we sent out to them, one of the clear points we did make was that we are a republic. So anyway, I'm going to try to move this week to try to get books together and send these books to, you know, all of these individuals and update some of them that haven't been receiving the papers with at least the last presentment that we did to Trump and Bondi. And again, in that particular paper, we did make the point to stop calling us a republic. I mean, stop calling us a democracy. We're a republic. You know, there are a couple of things that are very hard for people to digest, but we can't survive if we continue in them. We may think we can, but we can't. And that is, and I think most people that participate here at National Liberty Alliance understands this, that we have to get rid of the bar. The bar has got to go. They've got to be removed from our courts. They're destructive, and they bring in their civil law, Babylonian law, and they've destroyed our courts. They've destroyed America, ultimately. Without the bar, we would never be in the situation we're at right now, because they're the ones that have worked all of these problems out through the law, through statutes, to create the system, this democratic system that we have. The other thing that we have to change, and that is getting rid of political parties. George Washington was so clear, and he wasn't the only one. He just did the most writing on it. At least he did so in his farewell address. And so he made it very clear that parties are going to be the destruction of this nation. And all they do is it's a right-left battle constantly, right taking us the same direction ultimately that left takes us anyway. It just takes us further and further away from our republic. So parties have got to go. The bar has got to go. We have a campaign for constitutional sheriffs, and it's directly attached particularly to the creating of committees of safety. But we can educate our sheriffs even if we haven't started a committee of safety. But everybody should be looking into getting a committee of safety started, and we should be educating our sheriffs. So I don't know that there's any simple way to do this, but the only way I can think of is to really, you know, get each state to work with the counties, whichever number of committees of safety they got going within their county, within that state, as far as the counties are within that state, to get together and really push forward a requirement within our states for proper education for our sheriffs, because they're totally ignorant. There are some sheriffs that are informed. There are sheriffs that have some reasonable, education. But I don't know that many or any of them really understand the power and the authority of the people, and that we are the lawmakers. So we have to repair this problem. In the process of repairing these problems, particularly getting rid of the bar, you know, we'll start to straighten up our courts. But it's very difficult for these people to move over to from statutes to common sense, which is really common law. They've been trained in their process of thinking as far as the courts go, that, again, we live under civil law. And after all, they spent $250,000 to get an education. And then we come along and tell them, well, it's all wrong. It's upside down. This is not who we are. Today I sent a book to Joe Rogan. You know, Joe Rogan has a lot of great discussions. Sometimes, he gets involved in some of the conversations that really, you know, like Republican versus Democrat type thing. But, you know, people talk about democracy. He doesn't correct them because he doesn't know. But he's got a large following, and I think... to turn someone like that to understand who we are as a people, to understand our heritage and that we the people are the lawmakers, we ordained and established this Constitution, and maybe that kind of a thing could get a good discussion going by someone like that. But there's other people that are influential that we can get books to. Tucker Carlson is another one. I'm thinking of sending a book to him. But it does cost money to do this. You know, I've been asking for money now lately for the past month. Almost every Monday night I ask for money. Not too many people respond, but a few people do, and it's been very helpful, and we've been able to do the things we want to do. But we really got to get a bigger campaign going. We got to push the fact that we are a republic. We have to educate the people so they're capable of receiving and understanding and realizing that we can make changes back to our roots, that we can get rid of the bar using the 13th Amendment. Matter of fact, we demand it. We demanded it in our letter to Trump and to Bundy that we are a Republican, a form of government. And the 13th Amendment requires that there be no bar members holding any position of honor anywhere in this nation. And again, our founding fathers were very clear about this. They put the proper wording together in the Constitution, but it wasn't strong enough, and it left out the positions of honor, and that was the key point, because esquires hold positions of honor, and so thereby they carry the title esquire, and that's what the 13th Amendment corrected. It added the position of honor, which is esquire, and it also made it clear that they can't hold office. They're not permitted to come into our courts. So all these judges, all these people that are lawyers, they need to leave the bar. And as far as I'm concerned, and we're pushing for this, very strongly, is that the removal of every federal judge. They all got to go, every single one of them, because they've all been destructive. They just need to leave, and I think a lot of them, if not all of them, need to go to jail because of all the lives they've destroyed. They have violated their oaths. I'm not even sure how many of them really have oaths. But we're not going to really get our nation back until we fix these problems. And so again, the key points or the key problems that we have to correct is, making people, bring the people, especially those who we elected as our representatives, to understand that we're a republic, we're not a democracy, that we've given the legislators 18 powers, not 118 powers, only 18 powers. And they only have that power to write law for those 18. Actually, I believe it's 17 plus one writing laws for those out of 17 powers. And, they've just gone so far overboard. Trump is doing a good job, getting rid of a lot of problems. And I do believe he's going to be getting rid of a lot of different agencies. He's gotten rid of the one of the best things he did was get rid of the Department of Education, turning it back to the states and to the people locally, ultimately. But it's going to be up to the people to take control, because don't think that the state's not going to try to take control of that education. And the more liberal states like New York and California and many others, they're going to do everything they can to hold on to control of the education of our children. And so, we the people are the only ones that can correct that. And the only way you can correct that is by exercising your unalienable right of having government by consent. And there's only one way to do that. It's just not by going to vote, once a year. It's not just responding to maybe going to become a jurist when called for. No, it's a lot more than that. We have to get involved. There's only one way, and that is to create a committee of safety. Take control of our political process. Take control of our judicial process. Take control of our educational system. Taking control of our local governments. And the only way you can do it, one person can't take control. We need to work together to do that. And that's what our founding fathers did to create this great nation of ours, is they worked together in committees of safety. Every colony had their committees of safety. They sent representatives get together to talk about the problems and the situations which eventually led to the creation of the United States of America. And unless we follow them and do what they did to maintain control, a republic, we're never going to really have a republic. It'll only be a matter of time before all of these psychopaths and sociopaths take back control of our nation. Maybe not the next generation, but the generation after. They will come, and they will do it, because these people are drawn to power. They want power. They take power, and then they destroy everything in their path. They're not creators. They're destroyers. And so it's up to we, the people, to fix this problem. And National Liberty Alliance is the only one out there. I mean, if there's anyone else out there doing what we're doing, we should know about it. We need to know about it so we can connect with them and work with them. But I'm not aware of anyone. And if anybody else is, definitely, make that connection with us. But we're really the only one pushing these points and trying to strive to bring us back to a Republican form of government again, and to hold these people accountable by taking control on the grassroots level, taking control of our education for our children, educating ourselves and getting the message out into our local communities that they need to educate themselves, that they need to get involved. And you're not going to get everyone involved, but you can get quite a few people involved if you do the right things. One of the best ways to build a committee of safety is to connect with the people, connect with the people within every one of the school districts within your county, and getting them excited about bringing a proper education into our schools and showing them how to do it. And that will grow committees of safety greatly, and then other interests will be picked up. But the real success story will be years down the road. If we get a proper education to our children, and we're working on trying to do that. We want to write books for K through 12, to educate our children, to give them a proper education, you know, to know who we are as a people, to understand our heritage, to know the Constitution, to be able to see when it's being violated because they know the Constitution, to understand our founding fathers and who they are and what they gave up to do to give us what we have today, and our duty to exercise our right of government by consent, our duty to give back, our duty to teach our children morality and how to walk in life. You know, right now, of course, our schools are totally polluted. They've been destroyed, and they've demoralized our children. And our children are out of control. And of course, not all of them, but generally speaking, most of them, I would say, because schools have been destroying them. But only we, the people, can fix that problem. And so, people need to get involved in this campaign for constitutional sheriffs. People need to get involved in their communities by building committees of safety. They need to connect with their sheriff. They need to demand that their sheriff be obedient to the law and to the people, what the desire and the will of the people are. Same thing with the school districts that control the curriculums. We need to, the board members for the school districts, we need to require that they be obedient to the we the people and have a proper education. You know, our paperwork, we asked Trump, or we did more than ask, really. We were pushing forward on it, pretty much almost a demand, that in order for any school to get federal funding, they need to be given a proper education. But then there has to be that proper education. There is no proper education for our children. You know, there are some things maybe that are being taught, about our Constitution and civics, different curriculums. But nothing that really gives our children what they really need to know. Nothing that gives them a freedom of who they are, the liberty that they truly have, and the power that they really have, that we are the lawmakers. And we have to approach all these things with a sense of honor, justice, and mercy. And we have to teach our children, to be successful and how to become successful. We could do all of that with a proper education, alongside, of course, the other subject matters that they need to really become educated. So anyway, one of the things I want to push hard on this week, and hopefully people will help to support this financially, and that is to send books to all of the people within Trump's administration. We've got a list of about 24 people, maybe 25. But there's more people. I think we're going to hit maybe 30 to 40 people. I don't know that we'll hit 40, but 30 or 35 people maybe. People who are in the administration that have positions of power, people that are close to Trump, people that are highly involved in trying to save this nation, certain congressmen and senators. And if anybody has any ideas, particularly of individuals that should probably receive a copy of the book, Government by Consent, because that's the book, I think, that will wake them up. It's going to be tough to wake up a lawyer. I've never been able to wake a lawyer up. I've tried, but I've never been able to. First of all, maybe they've been so demoralized also because they're so money-focused. You know, it's all about money, money, money. And of course, that's what the corruption of all these people are. The same thing with people who hold office. But in any event, we need to capture as many as we can, at least get the non-lawyers educated, opportunity to the lawyers also educated, hopefully they'll read the book. But it is difficult for them to accept something that changes their whole world, that takes them a whole different new direction. But that's what we have to try to do. We only have to get a couple of really strong-willed people to really come to the certain knowledge, and they will dog the others to do the right thing. Someone like Musk, one particular person. I mean, there's a few of them that I could think of, but Musk, I think, is the most strongest one. If we can turn Musk, and I've been working on Musk, I've already sent a book to Musk. I've been copying Musk, all the paperwork that we've been sending to the Trump administration also. So I believe he's getting educated. He's a curious individual. And I do think he's reading our papers, but at some point he will if he hasn't been. He's got to realize there's something there, But in any event, anyway, I sent him a book about a week ago, so he has it by now. And but I'd like to get a campaign going. I'd like to do it this week. I'm going to start working on preparing to do it this week, trusting that people will assist us financially to get this out there. And we don't need a lot of money, but we do need money, you know. And many other things. I don't know if people have any other ideas on things that we could do, things that might help to really get this message out. But I want to tell you something. If we don't get the word republic back in and into the people who are governing us, we're going to be in big trouble, because it's a false foundation, you know, when they believe that word, democracy. And they don't even understand what a democracy is. You know, the most ignorant people just think it's just about voting for people. But once you call yourself a democracy, then they get to debate our liberties, like they've been doing all my life. They debate the things that were rock solid and what our heritage is. They've been doing that all my life. And they've done a darn good job at it, because they've destroyed so much. They've taken so much from us. But we have to take it back. We have that opportunity. This is the time. This is not the time for complacency. This is not the time for us to think Trump's got it under control, or I can sit back and just glide along. It's not that time, because you're not doing anything for your children, for your posterity, because it is going to return. No matter what you do, no matter what Trump does, unless we get up and take control and teach our children to take control and our children's children's children, until we do that and make sure that happens, we will never have control of our nation. We will only lose it again, because that's the nature of man. You know, the hearts of men is desperately wicked. Who could know it? Thus says God. Okay, anyway, hopefully people get more involved and get committees of safety going and help us support us financially a little more than what you know, we're really supported by just a few people. It is true, we got a lot of people giving us $5 and $10, and that of course is great, because that builds up after you get maybe 100 or 200 people together, you know, get a few dollars coming in, and supports, keeps the lights on, so to speak, pays the bills. But to do all these other projects costs a lot of money, and that's where we fall short. There's so much more we want to do. And again, you know, we are looking for major funding, hoping that someone with deep pockets will recognize what we're doing, understand the wisdom of what we're doing, and to get a proper education in school so we can write the books, K through 12. Okay, with that, we're going to move to, I see we have people in the queue right now, so give me a minute. I got to walk away from my desk for a moment. My dog is asking to go out, so I'll be back in a second. But anyway, we do have some people in the queue. Eric, if you got anything or anybody else has anything you want to share for a minute or two, I'll be right back.
Okay. Nothing off the top of my head. Jan, Terry?
Let's see. Trump dumped, let's see. Now I'm forgetting. But I know one thing. Trump announced the tariffs that were going to be on the Chinese-made Apple computers or Apple phones. And so today, Apple announced that they got 20,000 open slots for jobs in this country. Sounds like they're moving away from China. So that's a good thing. He put the new IRS agents down on the border. They're doing a good thing. There was another something. Let me, where's my notes?
Yeah, also they got rid of a lot of the IRS agents, particularly the newer ones that I guess they were hired.
Yeah, that's true. And
I hear Apple's coming back. I think they're in China.
Yeah. And
car manufacturing's coming back.
And Doge has found that they have $3.7 trillion that have no record of where the money went.
And you know, Trump said that he was looking to cut 20% out to give back to the people. And that's when they were talking about billions. So if you're talking trillions now, that's a lot more money going back to the people.
Hey, why is gas more expensive all of a sudden? Does anyone know why? Is there something going on there? It's more expensive here in Georgia than it had been. Not by much, but it is more expensive.
I expect that to go down soon. All I can say is that the pipeline for gasoline is behind by quite a bit. So if it doesn't come down in the next month or two, then I would get worried about it. What you're seeing is the last vestiges of a Biden administration that didn't want anybody drilling.
Yeah, well, the oil that's coming down from, coming down from Alaska, you know, those pipelines, it takes months to get them back up and running again. I don't know the procedures or anything, but they got to get the flow, and I guess they got to test out the pressure as they move along the lines. I don't know how that works, but I heard that it takes months. It could take 4 months, maybe even more, to really get to the point where oil is actually flowing.
They put a pig at the head of it. They call it a pig or a hog or something like that at the front of it, and then they pressurize the oil pipe from behind, and that pig has to work all the way down the pipeline. If the pressure starts to go up again, then the pig has frozen wherever it is. It's jammed or something, and they have to work it out. So that takes a lot of time because you've got how many miles? 1,500, 20, 2,000? I don't remember. So, yeah, it can take a long time.
Also, I think they have to change the process, turning it into gas or something. There's something a little strange I heard. I don't know the details on it. But I understand that our refineries are not, created or constructed in a way to be able to deal with the type of oil. I guess there's different types of oil. So that's another problem, the refinery problem. So, but anyway, if anybody has anything final to say, otherwise we'll move back into we'll move over to the Q&A.
Press on, John.
Okay, we'll take our first caller here. Anybody else wants to get into the queue? We do have four people in the queue, but anybody else wants to get into the queue, you can hit *6 and 1 if you're on the phone. App or browser should be a button to get into the queue. Okay, Robert from Texas, you got the mic. Go right ahead. What's your question or comment? Robert from Texas, you've been unmuted.
Muted, Mike. I have to unmute my own button. I think I'm with you.
Go ahead, we can hear you.
Okay. You ask about other groups, and there's two that come to mind that I equally revere to what you're doing. I mean, although your literature and your website is unsurpassed. And those two are Bradley Dean of the Sons of Liberty Media.com. He's been preaching online for 30 years. And then the other one is the American Vision out of Georgia. And I'm fairly new to them, but I've known the people that are involved with them for a long time. So, I could talk about both of those for a while. But as far as gas prices, we need to, instead of focusing on issues, we got to get back to the principles as being the heart of the answer for all of the issues. I'm afraid that, gas prices are sort of like what toilet paper was at the beginning of the COVID thing. You know, that was a manufactured shortage crisis just to test us. So, but the principles we start with are those that our founders started with, and that's first sentence of U.S. law, creation in the Bible, laws of nature, nature's God. No human laws should be suffered to contradict those. And the critical part of this whole thing is a good knowledge of the Bible, and that's sort of the heart of the three associations that I revere, National Liberty Alliance, Bradley Dean, and the American Vision. So I guess I can just leave it at that. Unless...
Do you have any contact information for those people, or
Bradley Dean, I call into his radio station easily and regularly. What he did 3 years ago for me was I sent him the Republican platform from 2022, which is all about the Bible. You know, I had no clue. I went down there clueless to the convention, got the platform, and it just, I said, oh my God, you know, the first principle is creation in the Bible. There's 270 platform items, 79 of them have at least one Bible verse. Some of them have full Bible verses related to them. So that's Bradley Dean with the Sons of Liberty Media.com. And, you know, I've got his. he's online 7 days a week. Sunday has church, and sometimes that lasts for 3 hours. Saturdays he's on from 1 till 3. And weekdays he's on from 2 to 3. And
so anyway. He's got a website called sonsoflibertymedia.com?
Right. And his cohort is in North Carolina. He's in, is it Minnesota? Anyway, it's... Tim Brown is 5 days a week, 6 a.m. to 7 a.m. Sometimes we go over. But the whole deal about all three of you guys is the entire focus is the Bible. And that's what it was for our founders. And that's the only thing that's going to get us back to where our founders left what they left us.
Hey, well, I appreciate that. And the other one, you said the American Vision. Do you know the website of that?
Yeah, it's theamericanvision.com.
.com?
And
okay.
I just logged into it to check and make sure. Let me see if I can. I get online and then I get a little Cali-wumpus. But anyway, the American Vision, it kind of, my idea has been there's 177,000 precincts in America. The American Vision, they're focusing on counties. There's 3,142 counties. And, you know, you keep, and I agree with you wholeheartedly, the committees of correspondence and the committees of safety. And the best place to get your members of those is in your precinct. And those are well-defined. There's a way to get the information for everybody that's there from your elections department. And the...
Yeah, well, the problem with the precinct movement, you know, which we call the committee man movement here in New York, numerous other states call it the same thing, and sometimes, and we talk about them being precincts also. The problem is they're so focused in on the party. You know, I've talked quite a few times to this one particular group here in Dutchess County, and at one of our meetings we had a party person. Wasn't with the Republican Party or the Democrat Party, but he was assisting me and he was taking videos, for the one of the meetings, which I never got the videos. But in any event, when he heard me talking about the problem with parties, he got pretty angry. So we're not going to be able to change those people's minds by going into where they're at to change their minds. We have to get something going on the county level and call them for what they should be called, committees of safety. And then eventually woo them over, because they will be wooed over once they realize what we're doing, because they have a big attrition problem. Yeah, they can't really hold on to a lot of people for a long period of time. You know, they get people come in interested in doing something, and at some point they feel they come to realize they're being had. And that may take years to discover, but it eventually becomes discovered. And then the people who are in there for really trying to get their own things going, to get maybe contracts, government contracts and different things, and they're the ones that become the party leaders, and they're not going to give anything up. So it is problematic, the mindset of parties. And again, I've spoken with people and talked about the fact we got to get rid of parties. And a lot of people that I've spoken to say, oh, that's not even possible, you know. But that's the mindset that they've got. As long as we continue in parties, we're going to be just going to get destroyed again. It's just going to destroy us again because we're not a democracy. A republic will never survive a democracy. Go ahead.
Okay, I'm not suggesting parties, and what I am suggesting is your neighbor, you know, and your nearest neighbor is who you're going to go to in an emergency. So just in my precinct, you know, I've got 3.5 churches, and I've got 1,400 voters that will vote on a major, you know, election. And those are the people that I want to get in touch with them for
good focus, yeah. Yeah, so when you talk about precincts, then you're talking about the election districts.
Yeah, that's what we call them here.
Yeah,
and it's also, you know, Blackstone was saying that, you know, it's the most minute district that we do our voting in. So those are the people I'm talking about, what Blackstone was talking about with his minute districts. And we got to get back to what he taught and what our founders wrote is, you know, on one election day in the minute districts. And, you know, we try to do all this stuff with computers and programs and machines and that ain't it. When you're in your minute district, you know who's registered and who's not just because you've seen them all your life. Or at least, you know, here, I've been here since 1959, so I'm pretty familiar with faces and who I run into. So, I just, you know, we got to quit thinking about parties, although we can, you know, we got to work with our neighbors, and our neighbors happen to live in our precinct, and we can get that information from the, you know, the elections administration, you know, in each county.
Well, you know, that's absolutely true, because, you know, I know here in New York, when I was a committee man, you can go down to the Board of Election and get a walking list for the different election districts. And so you get all the names and the addresses. And when you do that, and you know, we can then take those and turn them over into a mailing list, run labels off, and send them information and invite them to meetings. So that's just another way of getting people together, because and you know, drawing people into what we're doing. But of course, first it starts off with creating the Committee of Safety, maybe getting 15, 20 or so people together and starting to form that Committee of Safety, and then do the necessary things to grow that Committee of Safety. One of the things, the best way to grow a Committee of Safety is to work on the school problems, because you can go down to real property and get a list of all the people in different school districts and then send them you know, an invitation to come to a meeting to discuss our children's education. And then at that point, you can also share the fact that we're going to be talking with the board to bring the will of the people, the desire of the people to the board, and require that they make their changes accordingly, and that our children are taught what we want them to be taught. But we do have to find a curriculum that's really going to train our children up on the way they should walk, to teach them how to be good citizens, to teach them to be morally minded. And again, there are different things you can get, but nothing is out there that takes the whole thing together. You know, we need to teach our children how this court system works and how they can take care of their own, problems, legal problems or legal situations or concerns. Everybody should know how these things work. They should know how the political process should work. They should know the powers and the authorities of the different people that we elect. What exactly they do and who are the people they appoint. So therefore we can find a responsible individual to deal with some bureaucrat or whatever the case may be. And so we got to do these things. But that starts, and then, like you say, you know, these election districts, which are also called precincts, and we can then get the list and invite the people from our neighborhood. Offer them, come together and get, whatever it is we want to talk about, but to offer an education. And we should be educating ourselves as we're doing these things because there's nothing worse than, let's take Jefferson said, if the people expect to be ignorant and free, expect what never was and never is going to be. But back to you.
So as I opened up, we've got to quit focusing on issues, and we've got to quit focusing on the morass of problems that's in our galaxy of problems, and go back to what our founder started with, and that was really the first and second censuses of 1776. And that focuses on the Bible, and I think what we can do to activate committees of safety is, we have this problem with the Bible that is not in schools. That was as soon as we signed the treaty with England, the first thing we did was commission 10,000 Bibles to be put in schools. So we go, I've got a card and I've been handing it out, and it says, should we be, since creation in the Bible are the first sentence of U.S. law, should creation in the Bible not be the first sentence, first subjects in U.S. schools? Now, if you just got some of your neighbors, 4, 5, 10, 12, 24, to go to school boards and say, lay on the line, our first sentence of U.S. law is creation in the Bible, and no human law should be suffered to contradict these. How are we going to educate our children unless they know the laws that should not be contradicted? And I think that's a good first, that's Concord, I think, and Lexington, and we can reclaim each of our school boards, I think, just with that lesson, because those are the facts.
Well,
that is our law.
You're absolutely right, as long as they're not driven by some agenda, because they're not going to listen to you. And a lot of these school boards, unfortunately, are driven by agendas. And so that's why, to do what you're saying is a good thing, but you have to have some power behind you. And that's where the sheriff comes in. And that's why we have to get good sheriffs. That's why we have to educate our sheriffs. Look, we have a problem sheriff in my county. We used to have a great sheriff, but he died. And his undersheriff took his place, and then he was reelected. He was elected into the system, so he's an elected sheriff now. But he is nowhere near what our sheriff was that we lost, Sheriff Anderson. And I mean, he wasn't the greatest sheriff either at some point. But then he got involved in the Patriot movement, and he became a great patriot. But the problem with the sheriff we have now, huge problems. They don't know the law. The deputies don't know the law. They think they're code enforcement officers, and they don't go out to help the people. They won't stick up for the people against the state police when you have a problem with the state police or the town police. And so we're going to invite him. I'm going to try not to embarrass him, but we're going to invite him to our meeting, and we'll ask him some difficult questions. We'll try to educate him before he comes, and if he doesn't get educated before he comes, we'll give him a book. Then shame on him. and he'll just embarrass himself. But we won't hit him hard with embarrassing questions. But if he doesn't respond correctly, and he's not going to back the people up and learn the Constitution and do what has to be done and become a law enforcer instead of a code enforcer and get up against the state police and the town police and the village police when they're doing the wrong thing, if he doesn't have the guts to do that, then it's recall time for him. And that's the plan I've discussed with a group of people that were working together to build the Committee of Safety here in Dutchess County, here in New York. And that's what people have to do. It may take us longer to get to where we want to get to because of that, but the first order of business is to find a good sheriff. And then we have to go into the schools. But when we go into the schools and deal with the school boards, we have to be in a position of power and authority and to make it clear to them, either going to obey us or we're removing you from the bench, you know, from the board. And we could do that in 3 days with a quo warranto, but we need the sheriff behind us to give it that oomph, that power, that extra push, because that's what they'll understand. They'll understand that authority. And then go through the process of removing them and taking their seats and pushing for new elections to elect different people for that board. So
okay. I'll close out here, but I say, as far as the school board goes, our position of power is our Lord and Savior and His Word and what our founders did with the first sentence of the U.S. law and with the first act of Congress after we signed the Treaty of Paris. Now, once we go in there and we lay that law of the Lord and the Bible, and we, you know, that's where we get our power. This is from our Lord and Savior, and we do it at that school board, and you start taking names, and that's the, you know, that's the Committee of Safety, that's the nucleus, you know, of people that will react to that. Now, my last thing in closing, our sheriff was the one that drove the tank for Janet Reno at the Branch Davidian, and he's proud of it, and he's the one that toasted of 40 or however many people got burned down there in Waco. That's our sheriff.
Well, it looks like you got to get rid of your sheriff. Recall, and we're teaching people how to do recall also. So recall is the answer to the solution. 90 days, they're out of there, new, and a new election comes forward.
That'd be great.
Yeah, just got to get the proper number of signatures within the county. And, you know, every year when the election comes out, the Board of Election puts out a book, a little hand. Well, it's only a couple pages. And it breaks down the information necessary on, you know, what the percentages of signature you have to get for certain different things, for different people to be elected into different positions, and also for what the recall would be. If you do a recall, they may not give you that information, but you can get the statistics from the Board of Election on what the vote was for the sheriff in the last election, and then there's a percentage, maybe 10% or 5% of signatures. So you know, if there was you know, let's just say, make it simple, 100 votes for the sheriff, you know, that's how many people went out there and voted. I'm not too sure whether it be how many votes he was elected by or how many people voted, but one or the other. But once you figure that out, then it's a matter of saying, well, if it's 5%, then you got to get 5 signatures for every 100, you know. And it could be more than that. It could be 8%. I don't know what the numbers are. And that might be different in different areas. Different places might have something literally written up. But there are standards out there, and that's what we have to work it out in. We've got to remove these sheriffs that refuse. And there are a lot of criminal sheriffs out there, I'm discovering. I'm kind of surprised certain information that I've heard and things going on, that there are so many sheriffs out of there that they're criminals. Just like the rest of these people in power, they're criminals.
I have one unrelated question. If I wanted to get all your books, do you have a package deal on those, or is there, how many books would that be?
Yeah, I put them up on Amazon, and they don't do anything like that. So you know, I don't know how to do anything like that. I think I got 11 books up there now, and I'm working on a couple of more, but they're kind of on hold because I got so many other things I'm going on. But I got a couple other books. Hopefully, it'll get up there soon. But yeah, I don't have any deal. I don't know. I'll talk with Amazon and see if they can. They got some kind of a plan or something to be able to do that with it. You know, I know if you go to NCCS and get their books, and I'm sure you're familiar with that. And you can get some real. You can get a whole. You can get some of their books for $5-6 if you buy them in a package deal. But what they got going, they got a deal working out, and they're really publishing and putting out and printing their own books, and that's why they're able to do something. So, and I talked with the guy that's printing those books. When I did the handbooks, and we were selling the handbooks for 69 cents a piece, I think it was, or 59. I think it was 60 cents a piece. And if you bought 100, you know. So I was able to work that out by buying. I had to buy, I forget what I bought. I think it was 10,000 or 20,000 bucks or something like that. But if I was able to buy 100,000 or 200,000 books, I could have got them a lot cheaper. We could have been selling them for a lot less than 60 cents a piece, you know. But, you know, you got to go out there and put the money in to really push out a lot of books in order to get the price low enough to be able to make that deal. But I don't think Amazon has a deal like that, but I'll talk with them. Maybe they can do something.
Right. It'd be good. I've got quite a number of books here. I've got a lot of the Liberty Fund stuff, and I use it all the time. You know, the Constitution's like between 4,000 and 5,000 words, and this is 5,000 pages just on the Constitution. And as far as NCCS goes, they have scratch and dent, so I bought 25 copies of the elementary catechisms on the Constitution for $3 each. So,
right.
You know, that was I can just hand those out and if people want to talk about it, I can, you know, talk about it. So anyway, but I would love to add, I've got at least 4 feet of bookshelf space in binders of stuff I printed out from in LA. And I just love it. So, as far as your books and, you know, what the list is and what the price of each, and, you know, I'd be tempted to buy probably the whole group of those. Anyway, we had a lot of other people getting here.
Right, but that's a good idea. You know, I thought about that because, look, once we get really moving, and again, it's up to the people to get moving in order to do this, we have to build, the administrators for the grand and petit juries. And take control of, orientating our juries and keeping them clean and prevent them from being controlled by, either prosecutors or judges or whatever the case may be. That's the job of the people, and we're trying to organize that too. But it's a little bit down the pike before we can really push hard. I know we had a lot of people that signed up for that, but I'm not seeing all those people taking the educating themselves by taking the proper courses for the preparation of that job. And so now is the time to prepare, to get educated, to take those positions. And of course, on-the-job training is acceptable. You can be educated as you're going. But the thing is we need to get the handbooks at a really, really cheap price in order to get them out there so that whenever a grand jury or a trial jury comes into being organized, they need to be handed these handbooks, petit jury handbooks or grand jury handbooks, which really lays out the job. And I've already started, but I haven't finished it yet, a book for the administrators, for the details, a handbook for administrators. But again, the only way we can get them cheap is by having money and purchasing huge amounts and working a deal out with a printer that'll print them out. And that's how NCCS has done it. They take control in-house on that and able to sell these books very cheap. The handbooks that we sell, they're different prices depending on how many pages they are and so on and so forth. And, when at the end of the day, we put them out as cheap as possible. I think we're making $1 a handbook, so we're not making a lot of money on them. And, we can't make, if we were selling hundreds of thousands of them, then, yeah, we can go get away with maybe making a quarter on 25 cents. But we need money to survive, and we need money to pay the bills here, so we've got to make $1 at least. Even my, the hardcover books, we don't do softcover books, although you can buy them from my publisher. But, you know, I left the publisher and I went to Amazon. But all my books on Amazon, the major books, I got three major books, they're all hardcover books. And they're thick books. And they're 8.5 by 11. They're a lot of information. And the price we charge is really as cheap as we can get them, you know, but we still have to make a few bucks because that's how, that's bringing money into MLA. And again, you know, to get them cheaper, and I own, you know, these books. I can print my books up. I don't have to go and get permission from Amazon. I own my own books. You know, my publisher, to some degree, you know, I have an agreement with them, but even that's limited. Because I funded the publishing of my original publishing of the book. And I was very ignorant back in those days. I didn't understand how it works, but now I see the game that they play. And they charge me more money to run the paperback. It cost me more money to purchase that through them, you know, as an author, and that's my book. Than it does for me to go to Amazon and get the hardcover book, which is much, much better. It's much prettier. It's much more durable. I wanted to do hardcover because these are books that, you know, the people that are serious, they're going to be in those books back and forth and use them as reference books also. And you want something that's going to endure and hold up. So, but, yeah, I'll see if they can do anything. I don't know that they would. I think in order to do that, we have to be able to run large quantities. We're looking for money, big money, to do the educational thing. And again, at the same time, you know, we get enough money, we can print off a lot of books and take care of the printing ourselves because, again, you know, I own my own books. I can take them away from Amazon and go anywhere and do anything I want with them. Not so easy with the publisher.
What I've noticed on the random books that I've purchased lately is seems like the majority of them are coming out of Texas, and it's Coppell, and it's right near the airport. That's where most of the airline pilots live. I used to have a house up there a long time ago. Anyway, but you know that seems to be, and so in that regard, if I was going to purchase, you know, like, well, I don't know. I'm in a position where I can purchase books. I don't like to just fill out money, but if I'm buying books for people to use, you know, that seems like the best thing I can do. And I'm sort of developing a library here. So, but anyway, the Coppell thing, I could drive there in a couple hours and pick up whatever stock. I don't know. I'm just talking. We better let somebody else talk.
Okay. All right. Thanks a lot, Robert. Appreciate the call.
Okay. Yeah, I appreciate you more.
We'll take our next caller. Thanks, Robert. John, good to see you. John from Michigan. How you doing?
Hey, John.
How's it going?
I'm well. Hey, two things what you're talking about getting books and reading, they have dumbed down the students in the schools now so much. I don't. It's a challenge to find somebody graduating from high school who can read at a third or fourth grade level.
I know.
They have no idea what they're reading.
They can only tweet. That's it.
Yeah.
And AI is going to make it worse because they're not going to learn a thing. They're going to depend on AI. It's just like they can't read a map. They can't tell time. And it's going to get worse. It's only going to get worse. We're destroying ourselves. You know, there is no answer or solution to this. AI is our biggest enemy and our biggest problem. And I don't know that there's a solution to this because you have to convince people to control their children and to take these things away from them and not permit them to use them until they get older and use them for specific things. AI I refuse to use altogether. I will not use AI. Because that dumbs you down, because why am I going to turn myself and my research over to them? You know, my retaining and the knowledge that I have is because I do the research and because I spend time with it. But if I give it to AI, I just get a report, you know, I can get a book printed out. And soon, there'll be nobody writing books. AI will write you books. And it will just become a bunch of morons. That's all we'll become.
Mm. But a video of a guy who was just interviewing college kids and asking them basic questions, you know, I mean, like, how many minutes are a quarter of an hour? You know, 25, you know, because 25, a quarter is 25. You know, I mean, you know, how many inches? They didn't know how many inches were in a foot, how many feet in a yard. I mean, they said, here, they asked a question, if you were born 8 years ago, how old are you? You know, and they said, 13, 14, 17. They hadn't a clue. This is stupid.
It's really bad. Again, this is up to the people. This is why committees of safety are so important, to re-educate themselves and to try to get the local people educated and bring a proper education into our schools and require our children to have an education. And I know we spoke about this before, but if you go under our Start a Committee of Safety tab here on nationallibertyalliance.org, and you click on Handbooks, Videos, and Tools, and you open up that page, you come down, and I think I shared this last week or the week before, but you come down to our list of papers and stuff that we have and documents, and you click on 8th grade test for 1895,
right.
And the education, an 8th grade education. This is the final test for graduation. And, and this test is quite long. You know, grammar is allotted is 1 hour. Arithmetic, one and a quarter hours. History, three quarters of an hour. Orthography. How do you pronounce that?
What is that?
Orthography.
Orthography. Okay. Orthography, 1 hour. Okay, that's phonics, alphabet, the rules of spelling and that kind of stuff. Geography, 1 hour. Okay, so when you put it together, it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It's a 5 hour test. Okay? And that's the graduation test for 8th grade. Our children going through 12 years in school, okay, you know, K through 12, okay, they should have equivalent to a college education, without the doctrines, of course. That's an extended education. But the general, the subjects of in college that you have to do, the reading, the great works, and those kind of things, you know, by the time our kids get into high school, they should be reading the great works. They should have the ability to read the great works. They should have the ability to understand what they're reading and talk about it. Because it can be done. I've seen it. I've seen it in one school in particular. All the children were moving along. It wasn't that one child was more special than the other child, although, of course, some people are more intelligent in certain areas anyway than others. But the bottom line is that they all grew together and accumulate the same level of education as they went through this school, you know, that this private school that I'm talking about. It's a Christian school. So we need to get a good education, make our children think. And schools should not permit, they should not allow children to come in with their smartphones. First of all, they're destructive. They don't need them. If they have an emergency, they got to make a call to their parents, they can go down to the office and make the call. There's just no need for them to come to school with these phones. First of all, it's destructive to the society level of their age. They destroy each other. They're not mature enough to be able to handle these things. And it makes them dumb, stupid, and it gets them lost in the tweeting and all this other stuff. You know?
Yeah.
But it's up to the people to understand this problem and to execute it within their schools and require it within their schools. You know, Trump sent education back to the states. And we better be careful that the state doesn't grab hold of it. We need to get it back to the boards, back to the people, back to the educational, you know, the board, the education boards, which the educational districts in each one of our counties. And in my county, I believe we have 20 districts, school districts. I thought it was more than that, but someone brought it up in a meeting, and then I went to look up because I did do a little report on it. I forgot. And it's about 20. So we got 20 school districts in my county, maybe 21. But, it's up to us to really work on these school districts within our counties to get a proper education and get our children going, because it is really, really bad. They don't know who George Washington is. They don't know the difference between Revolutionary War and the Civil War. I mean, our children are morons. But maybe yet we are, to some degree, morons, too. And I speak to myself first. You know, I was
they're so stupid. I think you're giving them a lot of, by saying they're morons, you give them a lot of credit, because they don't even qualify for that, I'm sure, most of them. So.
Yeah, it's a shame.
One thing I was going to say here is interesting, as far as lawyers go. Now, I'm not sure what it's like in New York, but in Michigan, the statute law is that all lawyers have to be licensed, and all judges have to be licensed. And there are no licensed lawyers or judges anywhere. I'm sure it's not in New York. You know, they got a bar card, but the bar is a private organization, and it's not a license. Have you ever brought that up to them?
Well, you can't really require a license for a right. You know, the judicial system is one of the most important system or important things that people need to be involved with. You know, of course, there are a few other things more important than that, like your relationship with God. But you know, one of the things we really are so important is to be able to handle your own business. Right now, courts of law does not permit, a judge to come into a court of law and make any decisions. They can't make any summary judgment. They can't make any decisions on what can be used as evidence and what can't be used as evidence. What you have in a court of law, it's just a referee. A judge comes in and he puts on his, what do you call it, hat, his, goodness, how come I can't think of the name of the word?
Maritime equity law, yeah.
Well, again, you know, a sheriff can run a court of law, a coroner can run a court of law. And there's numerous other people, but they can only be, all they are traffic cops. They don't get to decide or make decisions. That's up to the jury. And that's the point. A court of law, it doesn't permit anyone that works for the government to have any participation in any of the decision-making within that court. It's all done by the people. You know, the people should be orientating the juries. The juries are the people. They make decisions. They decide the law. They decide the facts, and they decide the punishment. And then whoever is sitting in there to make that final, conclusion to the matter of whatever the will of the jury is, then they, write it up. I guess they could write it up with the jury, because they could put it together, and then it's the order that goes out to the sheriff to execute it.
The laws that they passed don't apply to the people, John. I mean, they apply to the corporations and the government.
That's the point, yeah.
Right, and that's what I'm saying. But if you look even at the statutes, so the statutes require, in Michigan anyway, I don't know about New York, they require all the lawyers and the judges to be licensed, and it's impossible for them to be licensed because they don't, if you ask them for the license, they show you the bar card, and the bar card is a private organization. It's like your home builder association. You know, you're a member of the home builder association or whatever like that. There are no licensed attorneys in Michigan, period.
They call here in New York, and I'm sure in other places, they call license. They claim to have a license, but the license is really just a bar card.
And there's cases on that thing that says that the bar card is not a license. I've got a builder's license. And from Michigan, I know what a license looks like, and a bar card is not one. That's a private organization.
The word I was looking for before, and I can't believe I couldn't remember, was magistrate. You know, magistrate. Every judge is a magistrate, which means they're there just to certify the will of the people. Ultimately, is what they're there for. But the bottom line, though, is if you have, I do think that lawyers should be licensed. If they're in equity courts, because that's a specialty, and there are 57 different jurisdictions in the U.S. code, so there are 57 different codes. Actually, one of them is vacant, so maybe 56, but it numbers up to 57. And so people that represent people in these particular jurisdictions, they should be educated in those codes, because that's what it's all about. And equity courts are courts that deal with commercial activities or people in government agencies. They have to follow regulations and statutes and so on and so forth, and we expect that to happen. But when you get into a court of law, okay, then to require a license would take away the right of the people. It's my right to be able to walk in any court and represent myself or represent anyone I want to. Now, of course, some people should be educated in those areas, maybe get a certificate or something, and people need to ask if they've got that certificate, and maybe that's the way to go with that. But you can't require a license to practice law as far as the people are concerned.
Okay, I understand that. I'm just saying we're talking common law, and we're also talking the statutes and stuff like that. The statutes, if you're going to be in a statute, you're going to be in court in a statute, you have to be licensed. In Michigan, you do. I'm not sure what it's like.
I would agree with that, yeah, because that's called an equity court. So if you're practicing law in equity, then yes, I absolutely agree, because you have to know all those statutes. When it comes to law, it's all about common sense.
We're on the same page. We're just bouncing around the thing. All I'm just telling you is, if you ever, when you went to court and you're arguing those statutes, have you ever asked the judge for a copy of his license?
I've never asked them, no.
He cannot give it to you. They're required to be they're required in Michigan. They're required to be licensed, and all the lawyers are required to be licensed, and they cannot give it to you because it doesn't exist. All they got is a bar card, and that's a private organization, and that throws their jurisdiction right out the window. It's just another thing to think about when you're working on this kind of stuff, because you'll stop the court right there in their tracks when you do that. They don't know what the hell to say.
Mm-hmm.
They'll present a bar card, but that's a private organization. That's a private organization, because a bar is a private organization. And all it shows is competence in that organization.
That's right. Well, you know, oaths and bonds, they won't produce that either. And you wonder if they have that either. Well,
precisely, yeah. And it's interesting what's going on. There's people are dreaming to be in live at this time right now. This is so neat to see the hammer coming down on a lot of these people, and it's coming down on the national level, and it's coming down to state and the county and the township levels around here too. It's really, really interesting to see, and people are screaming, you know what I mean? But if you're getting flack, that means you're over the target, and I think we're over the target, so it's pretty interesting.
Yeah. Well, look, I do see that people are becoming complacent, though. I know... there's less people coming to group meetings than there were before, because they're becoming complacent.
Mm-hmm.
I've got it under control. I don't have to worry about nothing no more. I'm good. I can go back to sleep now, you know, and try to enjoy whatever fruits that I can get that he creates. But they won't be around very long, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, man, we'll see. The money's losing value like a stone right now, and that's the interesting thing about it, is that pretty soon all these bribes and all of the payola and the stuff they're paying out is not going to be worth the printer papers printed on. It's not now, but they're losing all the faith in it. And you know, what are they going to bribe people with if there isn't any money that's worth anything? You know, the only thing they're going to have is solid paper or money or solid, you know, the metals, or you know, I mean, at least food or something solid. You can't eat money. You can't eat paper, and you can't spend paper. That's for sure.
Well, we're on our way back to gold and silver, and I think, look at what Trump and Musk is doing. It's really a unique idea what they're doing, because Trump turned around and says, well, okay, look at all these billions of dollars we're saving. We're going to take 20%, and we're going to give it back to the people. And they came up with a number of $5,000. Well, that has changed. That has changed since he said that, because now they're up to trillions of dollars. And the 20% to trillions of dollars is a lot more than $5,000. And it's rightly so also to give this money back to the people. And again, once we start to arrest all these people, like he says, you know, you rob the diamond store, you get caught, you got to give the diamonds back. So you're going to lose everything. And all that money comes back into the till, so to speak, and it's got to go back out to the people. And so that's happening. And that, I think, is going to carry things for a while. I kind of thought that maybe he'd be able to push and move quickly on his gold and silver, going back to real money. But I realize now he's got so many other things he's got to work on and prepare, and he's got to settle things. And at some point, though, that dollar is going to collapse, and he's got to move over to gold and silver. And I'm seeing it's very interesting with this thing with the gold now, you know, going over to see, is the gold still there? Do we still have the gold? Trump knows whether it's there or not, because he's already seized it back. At least he seized it at least from two areas. He took it out of the Philippines, where a lot of our gold was. I mean, I don't know who had it there, but it was out in the Philippines. And of course, Rome, his visit to Rome, I heard from a very good source that he took 650 plane loads of gold back from Rome. Okay, so that's huge. And you know, a lot of gold, I gotta believe, well, maybe that's kind of a sort of a neutral place where the gold was kept. I don't know that it would go to England, Britain, but and of course you got Switzerland. I don't know what's going on with those two places, but in any event, we're going to be going back to gold and silver, and rightly so. And that's a whole new world now, a whole new world, you know. And
we'll see what happens. I agree with you. These are just very, very interesting times to be alive. I mean, and I'm happy to be here. I'm happy to see these people squirming, you know, because they've certainly stepped on our necks for a long time, and it's a long time coming.
Absolutely. Justice is coming. It's arriving. He put all the right people in all the right places. It's huge. And he's getting them through. I can't believe he's got every one of his people through. I mean, you know, I'm sure there's still people coming in, and he's got a lot of judges to put in. And I heard he got rid of 150 judges. You know, there's a lot of other things. Bondi made a note of something about administrative judges. And I was wondering, you know, I went to look up, the meaning of an administrative judge. I know what an administrative judge is, but I wanted to see what they were talking about. And he was talking about an administrative law judge. Okay, so that brings the same judges that are administrative law judges in equity, brings them right into the courts of law. So I think they may be on the same page that we're on, that we're trying to get rid of all these judges. And they're talking about a lot of these law judges are going to go. Okay, they call them administrative law judges. So again, it's all the same thing, because they combined equity and law and called it civil law, and so it's the same judges that sit in both courts. They all got to go, every single one of them.
Well, John, this is February 24th. He's only been in office 1 month and 4 days.
Oh no. It's amazing.
Yeah, and all this stuff has happened. That's what I'm saying. He's throwing it down so fast, they didn't know how to react. You know,
they didn't expect him to move as quick. They didn't expect him to move as quick as he's moving and do the things he's doing. And he hit the right place at the right time. Their funding.
Yeah,
you know? He's got them lost. They're totally confused. They don't know what to do.
Well, you know, keep on pushing. We'll see what happens here. But okay, there's other people in a queue. But I thought I'd mention that. I say there are no licensed attorneys, and for any of those court cases like that where they're arguing statute law, they have to be licensed, and they don't have one. I mean, I've got a builder's license in Michigan, and I know what they look like, and I know where you get them from. You get them from through the state, and they don't. Those are bar cards are not issued through the state. That's a private organization. So it's like just like the home builders.
There should be a license for an equity, you know. To practice law in equity courts. Mm-hmm. There should be a license for that. No doubt about that. I would not argue that point at all. And because, again, it requires a specialty education that people really have to understand whatever it is they're specializing in. You know, I mean, you take the all of the lawyers that represent Trump, particularly as president, I mean, they got to understand all these codes and statutes, particularly the ones that empower the president. But they also have to understand many other codes, I'm sure, about Congress and the powers of Congress and so on and so forth. So they have to understand those things. When it comes to common law, it's a whole different new thing. And again, you know, you wouldn't be, you know, someone needs a lawyer and they want to hire someone and there's no licenses. Well, there must be other things. There's certificates and proof of education or whatever the case may be, because otherwise they could, you know, get someone. And again, that's a good reason why you should know the law yourself.
Right.
Even if you can't articulate yourself very well and you don't think that you can really make the positions and the arguments in courts, as long as you know and understand, then you can hire a lawyer and you could take the sort of the first chair, you know, and check it, you know, make sure you're involved in all the paper writing, maybe do all the paper writing yourself and get some counsel from the lawyer that you hired that's educated in that particular area. And work that things out that way. But you have to control your case. If you don't control your case, you're going to lose.
Been there, done that. So, hey, there's a couple other people in the queue. Thank you. I just thought I'd mention that. So,
all right, appreciate it, John. Thank you. Okay, we'll take our next caller. Next caller, it looks like Mary Ann from Indiana. You got the mic. Go right ahead.
Hey, John. How are you doing?
Good.
All right. I'm calling. The AG in our state in Indiana here is they're telling parents what their parental rights are through education. Like, medical rights are being conflated with, like, education rights. It's very odd. And then he sent out an email about how the city of Gary, Indiana, had tried to sue a bunch of different firearm wholesalers, firearm manufacturers, retailers, and a bunch of other defendants, because the city alleged that the defendants manufactured, designed, marketed, or sold firearms that were later used to commit crimes within the city. But what I find interesting is that this case is from August 1999, right? And then Rakita, who's our AG, is saying, well, the state of Indiana passed a law in 2024 that only the state of Indiana has the authority to pursue the type of legal action that the city is attempting. So, and then also, they're trying to say that the state legislature, acting on behalf of the everyday Hoosiers who elect its members, confers to cities and towns certain powers and functions. And I thought that was really odd. They didn't mention counties in there, but our county commissioner at a meeting the first Monday in February, I was pressing him about this whole economic development stuff. And they were saying about the CO2 pipeline garbage. The state passed a law saying that the CO2 pipeline companies can just go and test anybody's property and then say, oh, you have too much CO2, so we're going to build a pipeline. Like, it's the craziest, like, eminent domain. They can just take over people's property. They're giving them to themselves powers that they didn't even have the power in the first place to be able to give themselves the power. Do you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. it's crazy.
Well, and herein is the problem that we have. Again, you know, Trump, for instance, is bringing things back to the norm, but he can only do that on a federal level. He can't correct the state problems. Okay, and unless we have, and until he gets everything straightened out in the courts up there on the federal level, we don't have any enforcement. Because, you see, these people are, what you're talking about and the problems you're talking about, there are two things you got to look into. First of all, you look into your state constitution to see if there's anything that might control something like that, and you use that state constitution to leverage against what they're doing. And that's a battle. But the problem is you've got corrupt judges, just like you have corrupt judges in the federal level. Now, if we can get the 13th Amendment back, then that would remove all state judges as well as it would remove, of course, federal judges. So that's the beginning of the correction of the problem. Okay? And that's why, you know, I'm pushing real hard on that 13th Amendment to Trump and to Bondi. They need to understand this. Okay, and you know, Bondi's a little bit of a problem because she's a lawyer, and she's been educated. Her mind has been influenced by their teachings, and that is a major problem. You know, their whole world has to be turned upside down in order to come back to truth and to back to who we are as a people. But the thing is this: you use your state constitution to assist you to a certain point. Then, of course, there. The best rule of thumb, the best ruler, okay, is the Bill of Rights. You know, anything that is repugnant to the Bill of Rights is null and void. Marbury versus Madison, first decision of the courts, the federal, you know, the Supreme Courts. Okay, that's just to begin with. And our law was written in American jurisprudence. It was laid out very clearly that anything that is repugnant to the Constitution is null and void. So right there again, we have everything we need. We have, as far as the written controls are, we got to get rid of the bar judges. A lot of them may just give up their bar licenses or their bar connection, I'll call it, not licenses, but their bar connection, you know, their membership, and continue in that place. But once you break the corruption down on a federal level, to some degree that is going to work down into the state levels. But again, it's not going to get fixed unless the people fix it on the state level. People have to understand their power, their authority, and what they can do. They need to understand how to take control of local government. Taking care of local government and taking care of your school districts is just the beginning. And as other counties come together, just like our founding fathers came together in the colonies with their committees of safety, the 13 colonies came together to discuss certain things. There were a couple of them that didn't involve themselves in the beginning. But anyway, you know, they came together and they discussed the problems and they worked on the problems that they all had to deal with, which was Britain, of course, in that case. That was like our federal government. But in our counties, we come together. You know, let's take New York. We've got 62 counties in New York. If we can have 30, 35, or 40 counties at committees of safety, just half of them, you know, it's all we need to become powerful enough, because collectively we can work then on the state and bring them back under submission. We can also work on, as far as the local government is concerned, we can deal with our counties, our towns, our villages, our cities, all just through committees of safety. You know, in my county, we have... I believe it's 19 towns and 2 cities, okay? That's what we have in the county, Dutchess County. And so we can take control of all of that, and we can take the entire county level all the way down, all those governments, okay? Well, now, to take control of your state, well, we have to work with other committees of safety to be powerful enough to be able to deal with that particular problem. To take our courts back, what we need is the federal courts to become clean, to become back under the Constitution. And that's why we got to push Trump to get rid of these judges and execute the 13th Amendment. And then once you execute the 13th Amendment and we can get law and order back into the federal courts and get them back to do the job that they're supposed to be doing, which is to champion the Constitution. So when you have any kind of an issue on a state level where the Constitution, someone's rights, unalienable rights, and it doesn't even have to be written a right that's written in the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, the right to travel, and many other rights. Okay, well, once they violate your right, due process is the main thing that they violate all day long. So you can move it into federal court for cause, and you can take that court and bring them into subjection, into the will of the people, to will of justice. But again, if people think that they can be ignorant and free, forget about it. Ain't happening. If the people get more and more complacent because Trump's got it under control, well, you're going to lose it all. And if we don't take control of education for our children and ourselves and require certain requirements, like get rid of cell phones in schools and get rid of AI to be used in schools and make sure we the children don't use that, and we don't get a proper education in our schools, we're lost people. And that's just the way it's going to be. And it's a world problem, too, worldwide. It's not just here. It's everywhere. But go ahead.
And by the way, the... like what happened with Biden and the whole thing with one of the amendments he was trying to say, what was it, the Equal Rights Amendment or something like that? He's saying, oh yeah, it's real, you know, like it's legitimate. If the archivist doesn't recognize the proper process of an amendment, it cannot be enforced. If the archivist looks at it and looks at the process, looks at the archives and says that no, it was not properly ratified, there's nothing Trump can do.
I'm not sure I understand what you're saying. When you're talking about something that is law that has not on a constitutional level that hasn't been ratified, or what are you talking about? I'm not sure.
Right, because you're talking about the 13th Amendment. Like
13th Amendment is ratified. 13th Amendment in 1812 by our founding.
But is it recognized by the archivist?
It doesn't have to be recognized. It just has to be acknowledged, the fact that it exists, and we've proven that it exists. You know, there was the guy who did the study on this. Can't think of his name off top of my head, but the guy who did the study on this, he went down and found all of the different, many, many states. Back in the day when the 13th Amendment was amended, and found that there's acknowledgement within their state records that this was a ratified piece of paper of the 13th Amendment. And therefore, you can't ignore that. Bondi can't. If Bondi is true and she believes in justice and wants to enforce the law, well, that's the law and she has to enforce it. And that's true with anybody that's involved with the law. And Trump should come to an understanding of this and hold it up, okay? Look, we got to hold up the fact that the 13th Amendment exists. We got to hold up the fact that we're a republic, not a democracy. That the Constitution says that government is guaranteeing a republican form of government, not a democrat form of government. And we got to get rid of the ignorance within people that they think because you elect people by popular vote that makes us a democracy. That's a lie from Hades. That's not true. It has nothing to do with what a democracy is. A democracy is when you elect an individual and you elect it by popular vote, and that person goes, and that they can do anything they want now. Okay, anything. Because you've elected them for that purpose. That's what a democracy is. And that's why they get up there and they debate and argue a Second Amendment or First Amendment, and they just rip the whole thing apart. But if people understood that we're a republic, a common law republic no less, and we have no part with a democracy whatsoever, our founding fathers absolutely clear. Federalist number 10 is one of the biggest supporters of that point. The farewell address by Washington, again, is the biggest supporter of that point. And once people understand that, then you can't argue my First Amendment. You can't argue my Second Amendment. You can't argue my right to travel. You can't argue any of those things because we didn't give you that power. We didn't give you that authority. We gave you 18 powers, and it's listed very clearly. And none of those things is any of your powers. You don't have the power to change law, to get rid of the common law, to abrogate the common law and the rules of common law. You didn't have that power to combine them together and open up civil law courts, which is nothing more than Babylonian law. They didn't have no powers, but the people, because of ignorance, don't know that. And as long as we remain ignorant, believe me, they're going to pull a wool over our eyes over and over and over again. And you want to know how bad it's going to get? The conversation we had just recently concerning the ignorance of our children, the dumbing down of our children, the demoralizing of our children. That's where we're coming to. Those are the people, our children are the ones that's going to take power as time goes on. You think we have a problem now when it's being fixed? Well, it's going to be right back and visit us again unless we do something about it. And again, that means that people need to get involved on a local government, you know, the local counties, form committees of safety, educate themselves, bring back the control of our children's education, and start getting rid of these people that are problematic and teach our children to do the same thing. So if we don't do that, we lose it all. Only a matter of time. We'll be back. Okay, final word for you because we've got to move on. Marianne?
Yeah, I agree. Our kids, my daughter thinks all this is just craziness. It's like schools rise. There has to be a way to get kids involved, more involved.
It's very simple to get the kids involved. We have to get the people who train our children in schools, you know, the teachers and the school districts. We've got to get them under control. Because once we get a proper education to our children, you know, there's one other person, and I know there's a couple other people that I can get, and we can write the books necessary for K through 12, and give them a real serious education, an education that'll teach them a positive attitude about themselves, the belief in themselves. And of course, you know, God plays a major role of that. You know, as we were talking a little earlier, I pulled this up. If I have here, Memorandum of Law, Engel versus Vitale. That's video number 14 of 19, and that's found under Education Starts Here, Memorandum of Laws. And we put all this in audio, all these memorandums. But number 14 is bringing back, this is the problem, to bring back the Bible back into school. And I also wrote a paper on how that can be done and the proper way to approach that. Because really it's the moral and historical teachings that is required to be taught in the schools. I mean, we don't want to get into denominational thinking and spiritual teachings. That belongs to the family and to the churches to do that. But our founding fathers had all this figured out already. You know, I didn't have to create anything. It's all out there already. We just have to reset what they put together and just follow their lead. That's all we have to do. And that's what the book Government by Consent is all about, by the way. It's following our founding fathers' lead. That's what it's all about.
Yeah.
All right, well, I got to move on.
I did have a question. Did you have a teacher in mind that you'd like to hire for editing or arranging the educational materials?
Well, once we can get some funding, I'll look out there to see if people are interested in doing something, and then we'll have to make some decisions. But yeah, we do need look at in order to do the things that I really want to do, I need at least one paralegal, one secretary. We need maybe one or two educators, people who understand, particularly how to really approach the proper way to approach a child in first grade versus fifth grade versus 8th grade versus 10th grade and 12th grade. You know, we have to work through that and what the anticipation is in the education on their reading levels as they progress and what is required and what kind of how are we going to educate our children in reading. We got to get back to phonics. We have to get back to the meaning of words. I mean, again, that's why I pulled this test up here, which is this 8th grade test. And again, I couldn't even pronounce this word, which is really all about English. Again, I'll just hit it again.
Orthography.
Okay. So here, what is meant by the following? Alphabet, phonics, all of these different things. You got elementary sounds. How are they classified? Give the uses of silent letters and spellings and two rules of spelling words. I mean, you know, all these things. This is what we have to train our children, and all of our children should be reading at a great high level as they move up the line, you know, to an 8th grade level. I have always heard that newspapers are written at a 4th or a 5th grade level. And to be written at an 8th grade level, a lot of people wouldn't really be able to, a true 8th grade level. I think a true 8th grade level is close to a college education because I think this test in 1895 proves that point. Okay, so we have to educate our children. So, yeah, we would be looking for people that we would have to hire to work with. So, I mean, I'm looking to write books and put the education together, and Brent Allen Winters also worked with me on that. And there's a couple other people I have in mind that are qualified to do this kind of thing. But then we need the educators to work with us for the levels, you know. And then writing, instructions for the teachers on how to educate all these different levels of school. So there's a lot involved here, and we have to bring people together to do that. I will put the word out at the time, and we'll take resumes at that point and try to find the best that we can find.
Okay.
Because
when you're talking about the funding, an idea of how much you're looking for.
A couple of million we need to do this.
Okay.
So it's not, it's not just a few bucks or... If everyone with National Liberty Alliance as a member gave $5 a month, we'd have plenty of money to do this. Plenty of money. But everybody that's a member of National Liberty Alliance is not giving $5 a month or more. So that's a problem. All right, we're going to move on to the next person, Marianne.
Okay, thank you.
Let's see. Procene from New York, you got the mic. Go right ahead. Proceed, New York, you got the mic. We're not hearing you. I know last week we hit you and we didn't hear you then either. You unmuted? Proceed, New York. Okay, last call for Proceed from New York. Okay, we're going to have to move to our next caller. You're unmuted on my end. Okay. All right, we're going to have to move on. Ross, you got the mic. Go right ahead, Ross.
Hi, John.
I used to get
hey,
there.
John.
How you doing, Ross? What state are you from?
Oregon.
Oregon. Go ahead. You got the mic.
We have to fix the legislative process, too, because our Congress people are not willing to exercise the authority in the political process.
Well, you know, you're absolutely right. And you know what? And this is, we can control, first of all, we need to get rid of parties. Okay, parties have got to go. Because once we get rid of parties, then instead of these people going, we sent to Washington to represent us, they represent the parties or special interest groups. Once we get rid of those two things, parties and special interest groups, then they're there to represent the people. Now, it's up to the people to send their representative in. And it only takes a couple of counties working, and you can do it probably in one county, too, and take control of your representative, your congressman. But if you get to two or three counties or whatever it is that that they encompass, then, of course, you have more people involved, and the job can be done a lot easier to be able to get these people in power or to take these people out of power. So we can control our legislators by controlling our representative, our congressman. You know, as far as the senators are concerned, we need to give them back to the state because the state needs to have that because that's their representation in the federal level. The states have representation and the people have representation. And
yeah, so, what you were saying about the state representation is really what it is the state's interest is represented at the federal level.
Well, exactly, and that's the way it's supposed to be. Right now, it's not. If the states had the ability of making their vote on the federal level because they had control of their senators, and that was destroyed by the 17th Amendment, it broke the balance of power. Well, we wouldn't be having a lot of the problems we have because they wouldn't have been able. Because they have to take over every single state in order to get control of the Senate. Right now, they control the Senate through special interest groups, and you can see that in the debates and arguments that they have today. Anyone that's listening in on any of those things, you see the ridiculous, things that these people that refuse to fix. Okay, it's so blatant, and it doesn't make any common sense. And there's only a few of them up there that are making common sense that are trying to push the others that refuse to move. And it's not that they don't have common sense. It's the fact that they've been paid off. That's the problem. And,
yeah.
And that would happen if they were controlled by the state legislature and the governor. Because the way it should work, and I think the states can do it in a couple of different ways, but generally I think most states were doing it and should be doing it maybe, is the governor would choose an individual or two individuals to represent them, but the legislators have to approve them. That's the normal process, and that's the way it should go. And so you give it back to them. And remember, you know, they can only do, there's only certain things that they have control of that Congress is irrelevant to them. But as far as passing law or anything like that, both houses have to pass that. And there's a lot of things that both houses have to pass. And so therefore, if the state makes an error or is corrupt, the people can correct that error with their representatives, and vice versa. If our representatives make the error or is corrupt, then the state can correct that from their perspective. So therein is the balance that was destroyed.
It's not just, I think the federal level is not the problem. It's also at state level too that state representatives at the state house don't represent us either.
That's right. Because again, you get back to the special interest groups and back to the political parties. Everybody that goes to vote, and I'm guilty of this myself because I don't know who these people are that I'm voting for, so I trust the Republican Party, and it was a big mistake, of course. So you try to do the best you can. There's no place out there to really get some good information. That's another thing that National Liberty Alliance can do, and it's part of our plan at some point, and that is to educate the people on the job requirements and what it is that these people are responsible for that we're electing to all these different offices, whether it's the dog catcher or the president of the United States and everything in between. Okay, what's the job that they're, what are they required to know? What is the job that they're doing? And who are they appointing? What appointing powers do they have? and what kind of an education do they have? What kind of a, you know? And I think Trump has proven the fact that we really want to get business people, business-minded people into government, because it is a business. Okay, to a large degree, it's a business, and so we need people who think about these kind of things, especially on the federal level, not so much maybe on the state level. But the thing is when if you get rid of parties, then they're not collected together voting the party line, because that's what they're doing. If we get rid of special interest groups, then they're not being paid off to go in a certain direction. So that's the problem. And we can fix that by executing the 13th Amendment and getting rid of political parties, because of no republic can survive political parties. It's an impossibility. George Washington was absolutely crystal clear about that.
Yes, and that level is the local level, meaning the county and city, towns and villages and whatever has the same problem too.
Absolutely, yeah. And again, we're not going to fix it until the people decide they want to fix it. So we have to get committees of safety. And remember, we don't have government by the majority. We have government by the majority that participates. So if you got a committee of safety and you start off with 20 people, or you start off with 2 people, 5 people, 10 people, 20 people. At 20 people, you're doing pretty good. You want to hit 100, 150, 200 if you can. And you could pull that pretty quickly within a year if you follow the plan that we're laying out. And once you're at that level, okay, well, you got control. You got control, 150 to 200 people, or 100 people to 200 people, working within a county. And some counties don't even need that many people, but working in a county, you have total control of local government, and you have control of your representatives going to Washington. Total control, okay?
Yeah.
But people have to do it.
Because people complain about, Donald Trump is authoritarian. Because he has so much power.
Thank God he's got so much power.
Yes, the problem is because Congress is not engaging with the president.
Well, yeah, and, you know, a lot of things he's doing at some point is going to require Congress's, involvement and to bring it into law and to really kind of... statutorize it, you know, to bring statutes to control it. But right now, he can do what he's doing, and it's great that he's got that power to bring us back.
Yes.
You know, what he's doing, what he's going to accomplish in 12 years, because this all started 8 years ago, what he is going to accomplish in this 12 years is what took 200 years for these people to build in order to take us out, and they were ready to take us out. And he's going to totally turn this whole thing around in less than 12 years. His focus of really getting to where he really wants to be is next year. So that'll be 2 years into his administration control. So it'll be 2 years in power. But he's got the first 4 years, which is a learning curve for him, and he did a lot of work back then too. Then he's got the 4 years to expose them to the people, what's going on, the MAGA movement, make America great again. And now his movement now in the next 2 years. So he's looking for a big celebration on July 4th, 2026. And that's when I think he's going to feel that that's his focus, I think, to really have this nation back to where it belongs. And we got to hope, and it's up to us to make it happen, that he brings our courts back, because we don't have courts of justice. We have no courts at all.
Okay. I'll hand it over, because it's almost time to go anyways.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Ross.
Yeah.
Okay, if we can get a couple more calls in, a couple of minutes here or there. Let's go to, it looks like Linda from Virginia. Is that what it is?
Hello?
Hello, you got the mic. First name and state. You're from Virginia, right?
Linda in Virginia.
Okay, I had it right. Go right ahead.
I just want to weigh in on this AI thing that you were talking about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
My situation, I applied for Medicare. After about 3 months, I was wondering, why haven't I heard anything? You know, the government's usually sending you everything. And so I called in, and they said they didn't get it. And I said, well, that's funny, because I certified mailed it, and it says you received it.
Mm-hmm.
So about 5 minutes later, they come back, and they say, oh, here it is. We got it. So so then I find out that they backdated it to April 1st. I called in June, and they had backdated it to April 1st. And during a time I didn't know I had coverage, didn't have coverage, you know, no consideration in legal terms, I guess. And then they billed me over $800. Then they threatened me that if I didn't pay the $800, they would terminate my Part B coverage. And when I didn't pay, they terminated my Part B coverage in March of last year.
Let me ask you a question. You're on Social Security, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So you retired or you...
Yes. Uh-huh.
Okay. And so you're on limited income.
Right. Yeah, half of what I was making.
Right. Right. Well, the thing is they'll talk like that until you stop them, and you got to say, look, I'm on limited income, and you got to, you know, then look at one. I did this for my daughter, and I did it for myself, because they wanted us to pay for the Medicare, but we're on very limited income. And so I told them, for instance, I said, look, I'm a vet anyway. I don't care. I go to the VA hospital. I don't really need you. I can't afford it. I'm not going to do it. And they said, oh, well, if you can't, you know, if you're on that limited income like that, well, then you don't have to pay. So you have to push that point that you don't have to pay if your income is limited.
Well, yeah, but, you know, I shouldn't have to. So it was their fault and error that they didn't process the application, you know, and they delayed it. You know, they're underfunded, they're understaffed. All of this, and you know, that's another thing. Why? Because the Democrats were in power for 4 years. You know, why didn't they fund it? And anyway, I want to get to the AI thing.
Yeah.
So I filed a dispute, and they also stopped my Social Security payments for a year. So I filed a dispute, and then I filed a congressional inquiry. The only problem is we in Virginia, we only have Democrats, because we're controlled by the government concentrated areas.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the voting goes to the Democrats. And most of the time, we've got Governor Youngkin, who's a Republican. But anyway, so I filed a congressional inquiry. And I'm getting, you know, even with that, I'm getting like the responses from Social Security, Medicare, whatever, are very machine-like quips. You know, they're just like, they're really not even addressing the issues that I presented. Mm-hmm. And they'll twist it to something else, you know. And they're like machine-like quips that does not address the issues.
Well, they're incredible.
And so I was doing some research, and I ran across an employee operations manual. It's called POM, P-O-M. And what this does is this manual gives them a code to put in that basically generates a response, right? A canned machine response.
Hmm.
And that's what we're getting.
Yeah.
You know?
We're going to end up with a government controlled by AI.
We don't have any government decision-making or innovation in it. And the problem is that anything...
Also, there's other problems, because I've got some problems I'm dealing with the government, you know.
Oh, it's in everything. It's in everything. Not just this. It's in the schools. It's in the... Even if you order an appliance, you know... Appliances, if you order an appliance, like if I go to Best Buy or Home Depot or whatever, Lowe's, and order an appliance, it comes out of a hub that services this huge area, you know. And you don't really know what's going on there. You don't know whether you're getting something secondhand or, you know, whatever. And it's just driving this whole thing. And the problem is there's so many problems with it, but they're not paying any attention to the problems. They're just full speed ahead, you know, trying to jam this in place. And we need to nip this in the bud. It's really, you know, catastrophic.
Well, let me respond a little bit here, but we are over time, and we have one other call. I'd like to give Larissa,
mm-hmm.
Lisa, at least a couple of minutes from Florida. But look, it's incompetence, number one. It's laziness. And,
right.
And
that's
right
what
now,
I put in my letter.
A lot of them have become very, very lazy because they're working at home. And, you know, I talk to some of these people, and you can hear children in the background, old dogs. So you know they're at home. And so they're really not working. You know, you call the government up, you'll be on the phone. I've been trying to deal with a couple of problems recently, and I've been on the phone this one time for like almost 2 hours, and
yep.
then I get disconnected. You know, they don't even have the decency to say, well, okay, look at it. You know, we're really busy. It's going to be an hour. Your call's going to be an hour. If you'd like, press. In some places, do this. You know, press one. And we'll call you back. And that's what they should do, but they don't even do that. They should hire more people, spend the money there instead of making war on the other side of the world that'll eventually we'll find at home. But the thing is that these people are incompetent. They're lazy. They're not watched. So they
well,
they,
that's what AI does. Is it sort of promotes that the you
okay.
know they can hire people that are not qualified.
Well,
no, they don't.
That's the look. The other problem is this: a lot of places they put AI in, and the AI keeps talking to you. And it's like a chess game to get rid of AI to get to a live person. Not that that's going to do any better, maybe, I don't know. But the bottom line: they want to move everything to AI. There are some places, some businesses, you'll never get anyone online, especially you know.
Yeah, they treat it as a one size fits all thing, where it's not. It's just a means to an end. That's all it is. But they treat it as like the be all end all of everything, you know. And it's
kind of late and we're over time. But I'd like to continue this conversation. Maybe get in early next week and let's talk some more about this because I'd like to talk some more about this. But
yeah, it's going to be. We need to nip it in the bud. We need to.
Absolutely. All right. Let's talk some more next week on this. Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. We'll take our last caller here. Only got a few minutes. Felicia from Florida. You got the mic. Go right ahead.
Okay, Mr. John. We'll be quick. The Bar Association, I was listening earlier. The Bar Association is an acronym for British Accreditary Registry, which means that the lawyers have dual citizenship in the United States and Great Britain.
Okay.
Britain has all the gold. There's no gold in Fort Knox.
All these bars are also sub to a national, is an international bar. And you know, here in for instance, here in the States, you have the bar of Florida, the Florida bar, the Texas bar, New York bar. Every state has their bar. And then, of course, it all ties into the British accredited, BAR registry, which is tied into the international. Okay, so it's all one big conglomerate, and you're right. They work this whole thing worldwide for any country.
Okay, I'm gonna be quick. As far as the birth certificate, okay, the Credit River Act of 1968-1969 proved that all loans are fraud, and how does that refer back to the birth certificate as being a bond?
And you also put this onto the market that they buy and sell us as chattel.
And we're considered human cattle. And how can we get our birth certificate? Because I've heard that, you know, we could put in our social security number and birth date and all that and get that actual bond.
Yeah, they're not going to allow you to play in their little sandbox here because, well, actually, it's a big sandbox. Anybody who does get into it and starts to understand it and starts to play on it, you're going to find your door knocked down and you're going to go to jail. And I know someone that happened to, because they were able to play and manipulate the system and get money out of it and get control. And they let them along. Then they arrested. They came out after them. But the thing is that's about to go. That's all being dismantled. 1871, you know, the Organic Act of 1871, that's going to be done away with, and everything constructed upon that. You know, law is constructive. Once you take out the foundation, everything goes after it. So once we eliminate and that's a major thing here, because just about every law that's been passed since 1871 is suspect. Everything that's been done by a government is suspect. So there's a lot of work to clean it up, and I think Trump is going to clean it up, and I think he's doing a great job so far, and it's going to continue.
But how does that refer back to the law of the sea and the law of the land and common law?
The law of the sea is something that, you know, which is admiralty law, and, you know, all that is appropriate to what's going on at sea. But what's on the land is on the land. There's nothing to do with on the sea. We're under the law of the land, period. But there's international law. We have admiralty law, and of course we have the law of the land. And there are 57 jurisdictions in the equity side of things. So all of those jurisdictions have a major play, and some of that is at sea. So it has its proper place. You know, when you go into a federal court and you see a court there, you see a flag there with the fringes on it, that's not inappropriate. A lot of people just don't realize that. I understand why they think it's not appropriate, but it is appropriate because they're an equity court. And they do involve themselves with decisions on the sea. So, you know, any kind of activity that goes on to the sea, it's there. You know, we have a lot of commercial activity that's out at sea. That's under the law of the sea as well as it is under the law of the land when it hits the port. You know, so again, it's very complex, and that's why John earlier had mentioned we talked about the fact that they should be licensed, and in equity they should be licensed because they need to understand those things. They need to be properly educated. You can't just have anyone come into the courts to try to defend or whatever a situation where they don't understand the laws, which is the statutes, the codes, the regulations that control that whole process of whatever the jurisdiction may be. And again, there are 57 jurisdictions on the federal level.
Okay.
You know, it's been said when you walk into a federal court and you get involved in conversations, the jurisdictions move through the conversation as you're going through things. And that should not be necessarily. That's why it's required. But they do mix that stuff together sometimes, I guess. But that's why, you know, when you go into court, the law requires jurisdiction to be established on the paperwork itself. And of course, more often, it rarely is. I've been in courts and asked the jurisdiction when I'm in federal courts and they take me into jurisdictions unknown, and I ask them, what jurisdiction? They won't answer that. They will not answer that because they can't. Once they do, it's over because that has nothing to do with me. USC 18, nothing to do with me. USC 26, 28, same thing, has nothing to do with me, you know. So, but they won't tell you because they don't even know. They mix the whole thing together when they're coming against the people, and that is the major problem we have.
Well, Trump's going to stop all that.
Yes, we believe. Well, look, I'm not too sure so much on the judicial side of things. I hope he is. Looks like he is. But there are certain things that I'm not seeing that they're acknowledging when they talk anymore. They know now because we've told them. And they know we're not a democracy, but they keep calling us a democracy. You know, and again, a lot of the problems they're dealing with court is on the equity end of things. I mean, a lot of things Bondi is doing, it's all equity. It's not really on the law side of things. It's on the equity side of things. So...
Right, right. But at the end of the day, it's all disclosure.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm talking about.
No, say that again about disclosure.
At the end of the day, it all comes to disclosure. I mean, they don't come on national television and do a three-hour conference about other things that's going on that the human mind can't comprehend because they want to watch football and basketball and other things.
Yeah. Well, again, you know, when these people talk on that are, you know, with us, they need to start talking properly in certain areas because, again, you got to wonder what jurisdiction they're even talking about, what they're involved with. And again, you know, it's oil and water, democracy and republic. You know, it changes your whole perspective. It gets back to our heritage with the republic, a democracy. There is no heritage. You know.
Well, I mean, the United States is Republican, so you know, I don't understand.
well, again, they've been working on this literally before we became a nation. They've been working on this in 1750. And that's when the bar came into the colonies to take control and bring us back into under the subjection of the king. That's what it was all about, the law of the city. But with that, you got a final statement or anything? Because we got to go late.
No, sir. That's it. Thank you very much.
Good to talk to you. Thanks for the call. Okay, with that, we're going to end for the evening. Good night, everyone, and Lord willing, we'll see you all next week. Good night.